I'll lay down there. I'm not too bad. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the City Council Chambers. It is Wednesday, December 14th. It's 9:30 a.m. And the City Council will come to order. Carla, how are you this morning?
Fine.
Thank you. Are you enjoying the cold snap?
Yes.
Good. Would you please call the roll?
Leonard?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Adams?
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed, beginning with communications. Can you please read the title for item number 1344?
Request of Brenda Hyatt to address council regarding smaller companies not being able to compete with the Portland Business Alliance for city contracts.
Coming up. Hi, welcome. Glad you're here. As you're taking a seat, if you're a lobbyist under local law, you need to disclose that when you come to the table and have a seat. All you need to give us is your first and last name. We do not want your address. We don't want your email. We don't want your phone number, just your first and last name. That hunk of wood has a clock on it, and it'll help you count down your 3 minutes. Glad you're here.
Hi. Mr. Mayor and council people know I am not a lobbyist. I am a small business owner. I own a small security company that does business within the city of Portland. And I have contacted your office, Mr. Mayor, and I have also been in contact with Commissioner Fish's office. And it was your assistant, Mr. Leonard, who told me to do this communication thing. The problem that the city council has is the RFPs that are coming out of the Bureau of Purchasing. And I have had a meeting with the Bureau of Purchasing also with Barb Gibson, and we came up with some great ideas. I just don't know, you know, where they're going at the moment, the diversification project, a mentoring project, things like that. But the RFPs that are coming out of the city of Portland for the Business Improvement District, until this last one for the Parks Bureau, and for all the other departments, are basically being written as a resume for the Portland Patrol and the Portland Business Alliance. And it is making it so that small companies like myself in the areas of security and janitorial cannot compete fairly. And, you know, I'm not asking to win. I'm asking to be able to compete. But when they come out of your office written so that you have to have a small army or a small police force, and you have to hire all ex-military or ex-police officers, we can't compete. We can't compete with $4 million that the PBA is getting from the Business Improvement District. I don't have police officers on my payroll. The way PPI does, thanks to the Business Improvement District, if you read those RFPs, it almost eliminates any small business. You have three security firms in the city of Portland who eat up probably 95% of all of the security contracts in the city of Portland. And that's G4, I think that's what they're calling them now. I know them as Whack in the Hut, Portland Patrol, and Pacific Patrol. And it came to my attention quite by accident the other day that Pacific Patrol has also put in an objection to the undue influence that Portland Patrol has. When they can do things like walk in here like they did with your original RFP and have it pulled because they don't like the way the funding structure is set up, that's not fair to the rest of us. And each time we do those RFPs, we are talking about approximately 40 hours, 40 man hours of sitting down and doing those. So I'm asking the city to please take a look at this. I will be in contact with each one of your offices individually, but please take a look at this, and let's see what we can do about getting smaller companies involved in the city, because we pay our taxes here, too.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, and Mayor, I just would like to comment that Ms. Hyatt and some other folks actually sat down with my team, and we reissued the RFP yesterday, and it's a stronger and, we think, fairer RFP based on the feedback we got from folks. So we appreciate the time you took to educate us on your concerns.
Thank you.
Can you please read the title for item number 1345?
Request of Norberto Lopez to address council regarding the impact of potential infrastructure budget cuts.
Welcome to City Council. Glad you're here.
Hello. My name is Norberto Lopez. I've been employed with the City of Portland for about 6 months now. I'm a utility worker in the sewer cleaning division. My primary responsibilities are traffic control, emergency response patrol, as well as sewer cleaning and assisting the operators to do that. By maintaining our infrastructure and protecting public health, water quality, and the environment, our Bureau contributes to the livability of Portland. The proposed budget cuts threaten services that are vital to our community. Portland citizens are affected by flooded streets caused by stormwater systems at maximum capacity, backed up sewer systems when overloaded, become potential sewage spills in Portland homes, streets, rivers, creeks, and waterways. We are responsible for routing traffic on busy Portland streets, requiring maintenance. During inclement weather, our snow and ice operations clear the streets in order to provide safe passage for police, fire, and emergency medical response crews. We provide daily commuters the ability to travel to and from their respective neighborhoods and places of business. Our sewers are deteriorating due to aging pipe systems requiring maintenance, overhauling, and redesign. Our streets are crumbling from the wear and tear and heavy use of commuter cars, public transportation, and large over-the-road semis. The wear and tear is constant and requires ongoing maintenance. This ongoing maintenance is what my coworkers and I address on a daily basis. Covering the many miles of sewer and street is already an operational challenge at our current staffing levels. Cutting 100 positions will dramatically reduce our capacity, impacting operational goals, and create an emergency situation for the City of Portland and its citizens. I'm a divorced single father of two daughters. My 17-year-old daughter Bianca is a junior in high school, and my 12-year-old daughter Stephanie is a sixth grader. Both of them live with their mother. They rely on my income to meet their daily needs and maintain the basic quality of life they are accustomed to. If these cuts at PBOT go through, I will be laid off. My joining the ranks of the unemployed will have a dramatic effect on their lives and will threaten their current living situation. I am not a homeowner, but I'm in danger of not being able to provide the necessary financial assistance to help my children and their mother hold on to what little security and hope they have while they deal with the real threat that they might lose their home. I believe the hardships that my family faces are shared by many of my fellow employees. Some of us who are directly threatened by these proposed cuts left better-paying jobs for the opportunity to work for the City of Portland. We chose the city because of its reputation to providing job security and for the competitive benefits offered as part of the employment experience. Because of the current economic conditions, the jobs we left behind are no longer available. My coworkers, families like mine, are asking themselves what will become of us. I urge you not to create job loss in your quest for cuts. We need to look at longer-term budget concerns. We need to coordinate strategic thinking. This is an emergency for Portland families, and I, my family, and the families of Portland call on City Council to stand up for the families of the 99% and work for solutions, not cuts. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Can you please read the title for item number 1346? Sorry.
Request.
Yeah, 1346.
Request of Moses Rosen to address council regarding the occupation movement.
Welcome back.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, commissioners. I humbly ask for an extra minute in my presentation.
Nope.
I can't have it.
Nope.
I'll read fast. Mr. Mayor, I voted for you and have supported and believed in you. Recently, though, I have questioned your actions. You are lucky to be mayor of such a fine city. Portlanders have flair, amazing creativity, and truly free spirits. We have a long history of innovation and standard setting. Across the spectrum, we love this town, we take pride in being Oregonians, and we cherish our country and its values, codified in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And across the spectrum, Portlanders are increasingly abhorred at the intentions and actions of the federal government. We are in fear of the evil corporate persona that's running the show. The nationwide, highly coordinated crackdown with police state overtones on nonviolent democratic people and the media slur that preceded it testify that someone fears our power. We saw the same thing nationwide. Horse troops, riot gear, water cannons, batons, pepper spray, tear gas on nonviolent democratic citizens. The DHI, Department of Homeland Insecurity, orchestrated the whole thing like a ballet. These un-American bastards don't give a damn about the rules. They're looking to paint occupiers into domestic terrorists and direct the military to round us up and haul us off to special brigs. I know it sounds wacky, but the full details can easily be obtained. Don't believe what I'm saying? Ask President Kennedy or Dr. King or Building 7 for that matter. Mr. Mayor, I believe in you, the real you, the real Sam Adams, the civic activist who stands up for his country's values and is willing to fight to preserve our liberty. You choose, sir. You are the judge and jury over yourself and, by extension, over Portland. So I plead with you, for your own sake and for everyone's sake, use your courage and your wisdom. Stand up or stand down. Will you be remembered like Police Commissioner Bull Connor, who used covert action fire hoses and attack dogs on peaceful freedom fighters? Or will you be remembered like Governor George Wallace, who tweeted in 1963, segregation now, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever? Or will you stand up like your brothers and sisters did at Stonewall? Will you stand up and be remembered like New York City Council member Yadenis Rodriguez and Philadelphia Police Captain Ray Lewis, who were stripped of their liberties while being arrested in Zuccotti Park? Will you stand down like Sharon Cornu or Dan Siegel, high-ranking Oakland officials? You are the judge and jury. We hope to support you in the future, but you will have to stand up or stand down, because the city's treatment of the occupation movement, which is not going away, and the bones of federal legislative agenda you are throwing us are unacceptable. At the very least, we need to see the council issue a resolution in support of the Occupy movement, as Cleveland and Pittsburgh have done. Cleveland and Pittsburgh. Mr. Mayor, I understand you have endured tremendous pressure from forces seen and unseen, as if someone has your fingers in
a vice. I need you to wrap up.
I will in 30 seconds. I empathize with your fear, but I submit to you that the evil corporate persona has our city's charter, our state's persona, and our and our country's constitution in a vice, as if they were tender appendages. Our grandkids will still be paying for these senseless wars and these treasonous bailouts. We must stand up together and shake off these vices. If our country has any hope of surviving,
I need you to,
whatever you do, I've got one more sentence.
All right, one more.
Whatever you do, please cease being a patsy for the corporate empire that runs the feds. In conclusion, I wish to remind you that ORS 446265 empowers you to establish a campus.
You said one more sentence, and that's more than one sentence. Thank you, sir. Can you please read the title for 1347?
Request of Barry Joe Stoll to address council regarding the criminal eviction of Occupy Portland by the Portland Police Bureau.
Good morning. My name is Barry Joe Stoll, and I'll follow up. ORS 446.265 authorizes you to provide transitional housing. Commissioner Fish, you were present when my property was illegally destroyed. I was in Chapman Park. I heard that the Water Bureau's equipment, I don't know if you know this, Commissioner Leonard, was being used to destroy people's property in Lonsdale Square. I went over and I witnessed that. And I witnessed our gender roles here in the Portland Police Bureau, Commissioner. And that's where the women dragged the tents out while the men suit up with riot gear. Now, I happened to be stripped of all my possessions as I got into the ambulance to go to the Manual Hospital for one of several trips I've made owing to my neuropathic pain condition. I have a severe disability. My disability is worsened by emotional stress. And I'm emotionally stressed every time I get up out of my camp where I'm sleeping as one of thousands of homeless people with disabilities, Mayor, in your city, and I see one of thousands of people begging on every freeway off-ramp at every grocery store. You're a failure, except for your bootlicking of the interest that my friend Moses Rosen was challenging you to stand against and not stand for. Now, once I was stripped of my goods, after I pressed into Sergeant Bacigalupi's hand the statute requiring that to be stored for 30 days, I had to address the fact that I didn't have my clothing, my bedding, my medical equipment, including prescription drugs that I obtained through the Multnomah County Health Department. Here we have one arm of the government attempting to address my condition, and we have another. You're a criminal one, Commissioner Fish. You're a failure also. You wouldn't have thousands of people homeless if you were anything but a decent provider of housing as housing commissioner. We have options. You let the Clydesdales camp in Waterfront Park, but now I have to escort people to the loo, past people sleeping in doorways as we exercise our nonviolence. The reason you have $1.3 million in police overtime is because you don't have 1 cent in fire bureau overtime. It's because when Moses and I start fires, it's outside to pray for you and your souls because you are depraved. Occupied Portland was illegally evicted, not because it was against the law, but because it was against you. Sergeant Poole said, reporting, as we know, police officers hang out at the 7-Eleven, according to Lindsey Hunt, he said on the Tuesday after, early Wednesday after the eviction, that he told his supervisor, we're going to have to stick the shit out of him, elsewise we'll never get him out. And they did.
Your time's up. All right, that gets us to the consent agenda.
I think there's one more.
Oh, I'm sorry, we have a very special presentation. Can you please read the title for item number 1348?
Request of Andrew Mason and students from Open Meadow High School to address council regarding support of the youth pass.
Welcome, glad you're here.
Thank you. So are we.
Thank you.
Appreciate the time, Mayor. Andrew Mason, Executive Director of Open Meadow. We serve 900 students each year, some in our own schools, some in our public schools. And our task is to serve what we finally identify as the clover-shaped pegs who don't fit into the square hole of the traditional system. And I've come today with Evan and others from our high school to thank you for the city's recent support of Youth Pass. The importance and continuation of this pass to our students and families must not be underestimated. I'm aware that there are many, many, many other worthy issues competing with Youth Pass at the present, but I'm here to underscore the importance of Youth Pass, particularly in the shadow of current economic hardships. Youth Pass gets young people to school. More importantly, it makes the difference for kids in poverty. In Portland, where the Oregonian reported that 50% of our black population lives in poverty, Youth Pass lands right at the intersection on issues of race, class, education, and poverty reduction. At Open Meadow, your action assures that our 24 graduates this year will get to school for the remainder of the year and graduate as planned. Across the city, there are currently in PPS 12,924 students enrolled in high school. 3,405 of them are seniors. And so if we look at the 47% of students in poverty in PPS, your action directly was impacting 6,000 high school students in poverty, 1,600 graduating seniors in poverty who will now have a way to continue on and get their diploma. And so this is going to require that I sing, because I want you to think about this again. I want this moment to come back again, because right now the wheels on the bus do not say move on back. Right now, the people on the bus say, graduate, graduate. Every time one of those TriMet buses drives by, it's saying to our students and those 1,600 students, graduate, as opposed to move on back and move on down the line. Thanks for what you're doing. And Evan is here to talk about, to express his thank you, and just, you know, the investment in Youth Pass is an investment in our families, in our future. And
I do thank you. We and my fellow students here and everybody at my school, we do thank you. I guarantee you that you have helped at least half of our school get to school this year and have a quality education. There are some of us that maybe don't need the bus pass to get to school directly, but we use it for other things. I myself have a volunteer position to fill at the family farm part of the zoo. I wouldn't be able to get to that if this pass hadn't been extended, and we thank you for that. And we would also like to possibly extend it if possible. If there's any more funding, as Andrew said, there are multiple things that the funding could go towards, but the most important is education and people's future. So we thank you for this.
Thank you very much. And
also, we do have a card here for every one of the city commissioners. We gave one to Mayor Adams by himself earlier, but we have one for the rest of you.
Thank you both for taking the time to be here. Very well spoken, Evan. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't the worst singing voice I've ever heard. It wasn't the worst.
Well, that's good. All right.
Thank you all very much. All right, we really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
All right. Now we're going to consider the consent agenda item. I'd like to pull item 1354 to the regular agenda to be, it has an amendment.
Yeah.
Are there any other items that need to be pulled? All right. Carla, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. That takes us to the time certain. We're running a little behind. We have a 9:30 time certain. It is a report. Can you please read the title? Item number 1349.
Accept the graffiti abatement semi-annual progress report.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Mayor, we are requesting to reschedule this to January 11th at 9:30 time certain. One of the key people in the Office of Neighbor Involvement is out of town on a family bereavement.
Okay. This item is continued until January 11th at 9:30 a.m. time certain in 2012. Unless there are objections.
We're right back on schedule.
We're right back on. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Actually, well, we're ahead of schedule.
Yeah. So we'll go to the regular agenda. Can you please read the title and I believe call the vote for item number 1369?
1369, authorize the city to execute a contract-specific procurement agreement to purchase electricity from an energy service supplier if in the city's best interest. I have a substitute noted for this.
Okay, I move the substitute.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any discussion on the motion to move the substitute? Please call the vote on the motion to move the substitute.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Substitute is approved. Does anyone wish to testify on item number 1369? Any additional council discussion? Carla, would you please call the vote on substitute at 1369?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Mayor, for delaying this for a weekend for the staff in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Procurement Services, and also Tom Bazell in my office, who have all worked really hard to add more specificity concerning the bottom line of acquiring less expensive energy that is also greener. And I also particularly thank Bob Jenks at the Citizens Utility Board for his advice on this issue, and David Tews, who is the staff person most responsible. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Well, I thank the council consideration and looks like approval of this measure. We spend about $19 million each year on electricity, and the driver behind this effort is to reduce the city's electric bills at the same time that we achieve our Climate Action Plan goal of 100% renewable power by 2012 for city government power needs. So I appreciate the additional polishing and work that was done, and I'm glad that it's been approved. Aye. All right, can you please, let's see if there's any, can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, item number 1370?
Grant the Bureau of Transportation authority to close Southwest Angany Street between 2nd and 3rd Avenues for the purposes of issuing permits to adjacent businesses to accommodate customer seating for the purpose of food and beverage service.
I think everyone, hopefully everyone has an opportunity to take a look at Ankeny. I consider it very successful. And Jerry, what are we looking at here specifically?
Do I introduce myself? Yeah. Okay, I'm Jerry Jenkins with the Bureau of Transportation. What we're looking at specifically here is, yes, to go back to, I'm here to talk to you about the ordinance before you, but to do that, I want to just address the earlier this year when we had the pilot program, the ordinance before you, to close Ankeny Street. That was very successful from the standpoint of the businesses. They sort of rushed into getting ready for the summer.
You moved the mic closer.
they rushed into getting ready for the summer and getting their feet on the ground in terms of the seating. They experienced a greater visibility for their businesses, better interaction really with the outdoor seating both at night and during the day, positive feedback from area, the employees in the area specifically. The building owners are very supportive of it, and they're working together toward a greater vision for that. We extended that an original ordinance through January 31st. So what we're looking at, that you're looking at in front of you, is an ordinance that would authorize PBOT to basically keep the street closed and for us to move into an annual permitting process to each of the businesses that would emulate the existing cafe permit process that we have in place.
Administrative renewal.
Yes.
All right, let's see if there's council discussion of this or if we can push forward. Has anyone signed up to testify on 1370? Anyone wish to testify on 1370?
We're extending this in perpetuity then, is that?
We're giving administrative authority to the Bureau to approve these permits on a year-by-year basis. And as long as they want to.
The one question that I've heard via email is regarding smoking in the area. How will you process requests for having the area be non-smoking?
I actually have not received that feedback directly, so I think that we would have to address that on a business-by-business basis, and if smoke is affecting, or it was the feedback that you got from residents living above?
No, it was other restaurant users who.
So why don't we, our legislative intent is for you to deal with that issue that provides for A, following the law, and B, providing for non-smoking.
Sure. Similarly to how other sidewalk cafes handle the smoking issue.
Right.
The non-smoking seats and smoking.
Thank you.
All right. Because the certainty of the business is there, I think they would appreciate it if I'd like to move we apply an emergency to this so we can just take care of it today.
Yeah. So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We'll vote on the motion to apply the emergency. Carla, can you please call the vote? The roll on the vote on the motion.
Tracy, do we need some language for that emergency?
The basis of the emergency is to be able to provide as much time as possible to the businesses that are directly affected by this issue to have the certainty that this will not move forward as they plan the next year, which happens, you know, around this time and immediately after the holidays.
Okay, and then I think we would just want the language that council, having found that emergency exists and that it's in the public interest, the ordinance will take effect immediately upon passage.
You've got that, Carla?
Yes.
Thanks for the follow-up.
Sure. Thank you.
Please call the vote.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I support the adding of the emergency clause because this would have been the time that people could have come and testified on this and there wouldn't have been any changes by next week. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
I want to thank the PBOT team for being nimble and fleet-footed and really helping the businesses get this together very quickly. It's become another iconic little spot in the city of Portland, so thank you. Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title?
I think we have to vote on the ordinance now.
Sorry. Please call the vote on the ordinance.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz?
Well, thank you, Mayor and PBOT staff, for working on this, and also community members who have engaged very constructively, as have the businesses. I did have concerns when it started, but it seems like those are being addressed and that there's being appropriate dialogue and collaboration, so I appreciate everybody's work on this. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Can you please read the title and, I believe, call the vote on 1371? We'll check it out here.
We haven't had it
there. We really didn't have the hearing.
Oh, it's a continuation, not a... Okay, can you please read the title, and we will consider a procurement report, item number 1371.
Did you also want 1372? I thought they were together. Did you want them both?
Yes. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. 1371, accept guaranteed maximum price of $31,552,701 from Advanced American Construction, Inc., for the construction of the Bull Run Dam 2 Tower Improvements Project and 1372, amend contract with Black & Veatch Corporation to increase compensation and scope of work for Bull Run Dam Number 2 Tower Improvements.
Commissioner Randy Leonard.
Thank you. This is a project that is consistent with our habitat conservation plan that the council adopted some time back. I'll turn it over to David Schaff.
Director Moody.
Christine
Director
Moody.
Schaff, whomever, please help us here.
Procurement Services. In September 2009, City Council authorized the use of a CMGC process for the Bull Run Dam 2 Tower Improvements Project. Through this process, an RFP was issued and four responses were received. The responses were evaluated by a five-person selection committee, which included three city staff, one Clean Water Services staff, and one minority evaluator. Advanced American Construction was the highest scoring proposal, receiving 86 points out of a possible 100 points. The city then entered into contract negotiations, and now you have before you the procurement report recommending a contract award for a guaranteed maximum price of $31,552,701. The city and AAC jointly worked on the Minority Women and Emerging Small Business and Supplier Construction Plan, in which AAC has committed to achieve the aspirational goal of 35% MWESB subcontracting, or $4,112,000. AAC will comply with the city's workforce requirements and all project work performed and will meet or exceed the 20% apprenticeship work hours. I'll turn this over to David Schaff and Mike Sturr to talk about how they got to the guaranteed maximum price and brief on the scope of the project.
Before you do that, could you just explain to those at home what a CMGC is?
Construction Manager General Contractor. So it's a process that we use where we evaluate other criteria besides the lowest price. So there were other criteria involved.
The benefit to that of the public is?
Project scope and timeline. And sometimes rather than just having the lowest bid, we can evaluate not only the diversity that is going to be used on the project, but how well the contractor will approach the project
and
a fast.
She can't say this, but in the right situations, it also prevents us from being gamed by the so-called lowest price that doesn't turn out in the end with change orders and all to actually be the lowest price. So it allows them to really dig in and make sure that the contractors that have come forward really can deliver the lowest price, not just as defined narrowly by state law. I know you can't say that, but I can.
Hi, I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the Water Bureau. And just to add what Christine said, this is, we don't normally do PowerPoint presentations to you. Our boss doesn't care for them that much. But this is a fairly expensive, very complicated, potentially dangerous job that we're going to be doing, and we want to explain to you how we're approaching this job and why it is as expensive as it is, and the type of work that the contractor is going to be doing, so you can kind of get an idea of why we did do the CMGC approach. So this is a project that's intended to comply with the Habitat Conservation Plan, which was adopted back in April of 2009. It is, and if as just as a reminder, the HCP does a couple of things. It both meets our obligations under the Endangered Species Act, but it also meets our obligations under the Clean Water Act. I will. No, not yet. So it meets our obligations under two different federal regulations that we have to live under. This portion of the HCP, or this project, is intended to deal with our obligation under the Clean Water Act and control the downstream temperatures of the Bull Run River. So if you look at that first slide, the Bull Run Management Unit, just as a reminder, we're 25-plus miles away from downtown Portland in a very remote part of the Mount Hood National Forest. And it will become clear when Mike starts to go through the technical slides that the challenge of a large construction project in that remote area are fairly significant. We have very narrow roads. We have bridges that are limited in their weight capacities. So we're going to have to do a lot of things that we wouldn't have to do, for instance, downtown, like TriMet's building in the river for the light rail. So if you look at the next slide, as I said, the Habitat Conservation Plan was adopted in April 2009. It outlined various tasks that we had to perform to mitigate the impacts of our dams on the Bull Run system. One of the things the HCP does is prescribe water temperatures for the Bull Run River, and that modifying the intake towers is necessary to achieve those prescribed temperatures. As an aside, the HCP is the only one in the nation that we're aware of that allowed for offsite mitigation measures in lieu of providing fish passage. So the HCP, as I mentioned, does two things: meets our Endangered Species Act obligations and the Clean Water Act obligations, and it provides us with regulatory certainty for a 50-year period of time. So at any point over the next 50 years, 45 now, if a particular group or agency were to say, we don't think you're meeting your obligations under the Endangered Species Act or the Clean Water Act, the HCP gives us some certainty to say, yes, it does. So it's a binding agreement for 50 years. If you look at the next slide, this is what we're trying to achieve. The very bottom line is the needed outlet temperature in order to control the downstream temperatures on the Bull Run River. And we have a number of years of data that show what our actual downstream temperatures have been. So it's not a lot. It's 4 and 5 centigrade degrees difference. But those 4 or 5 centigrade degrees difference make a difference to the fish. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to the real expert about dams, deep water diving, and what we're trying to do with the Dam 2 towers.
A little bit of background on Dam 2. I'm Mike Stewart. I'm the chief engineer of the Water Bureau. Dam number 2 was completed in 1962. It's a 145-foot tall earth-filled dam, pretty standard dam for that era. We have 2 intake towers upstream of the dam. This is what they looked like in the dry when it was being built. And this is a more typical picture of what you would see today, North Tower and South Tower. The North Tower is where most of our water comes from, and the South Tower is generally used as backup. Our project team is, of course, the Portland Water Bureau. Our partner in this enterprise is Christine Moody in Procurement Services. The design consultant for the design is Black & Veatch. And the CMGC contractor is Advanced American Construction. A little bit about Advanced American. They're an excellent, very experienced, heavy water construction firm, very well known in the Northwest, have done work all over the Northwest. That's critical for a couple of reasons. One, they know how to do this heavy underwater work. And the second thing is that they're used to working in our environmentally protected waters in the Northwest, and more on that as we go along. What we're doing, I'll mention this a couple of times, but you saw the slide that showed the temperature, and we needed to get the temperature down. And what we're really going to do out of this enterprise is basically we are creating a cold water bank. Right now, today, the gates to the towers come off the bottom. That's where the coldest water is. So when we bring water into town or we turn water loose in the river, it comes off the bottom. That's a problem later in the summer because we've basically taken all the water off of the bottom, and the temperature goes up as the warmer waters settle down. And what we're trying to do here is create a cold water bank. And what you see before you is kind of busy. There are lots of things going on here. But if you look at the bright red gates, you'll note that those are at three different levels. Those bright red gates allow us to take water at various temperature layers because basically the water stratifies in the reservoir. And we can sort of mix and match out of those gates and leave cold water on the bottom so that when later in the summer we actually need to release cold water, we can do so.
So is this what it currently is, or this
oh,
is
no,
what it's
this
going
is
to
what
be?
It, this is what we're going to construct.
Okay. That original picture you saw from the early dam construction, that's the way it looks now underwater.
That's what it looks like.
Okay.
Down at the bottom, there's two relief gates. These aren't used for temperature management. What these are is gates that are sort of on autopilot. If there's a 5 PSI difference between the temperature inside the wet well, we call it the wet well, it's basically a box hooked onto the face of the existing tower. If there's a 5 PSI pressure differential, the gates will open up and equalize the pressure inside so that it doesn't damage the facility. But the gates that we use to control the temperature with are the pretty little red gates. South Tower project elements. We have access and safety improvements on the South Tower. Some of these improvements come from FERC-generated requirements due to probable maximum flood and also redoing the mechanical equipment that's obviously was put in 1962 and it's over 40 years old and needs a tune-up. Also in the South Tower project elements, we have included the fish flow piping. This was originally put in the UV facility because when we were going to be building the UV facility, and it appears that we're going to get a variance, there was a lot of heavy-duty piping involved, and it just seemed smarter to put that piping in the UV project. Now, since it appears that we're going to get a variance, we still need the fish flow piping so that we can release water separately to the river for fish temperature issues. It was attached to this project because they're up there and a heavy contractor and can effectively build that. CMGC contract strategy. This is important. The price that we're approving here is the maximum price. It will not be the price that we pay exactly. This is really a time and material contract. And we pay for what we use on the time and material contract. There's a savings clause in the contract where we and the contractor share the savings. It's 75% to the Water Bureau and 25% to AAC. We feel that's a very good incentive for them to save money and do the best job they can and get off the job as quickly as we all can. And that's all been worked out with help from procurement services and Jim Van Dyke in Office of Counsel. Main cost drivers. The site's in the Bull Run watershed, and it's very remote. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some pictures. This is a fascinating project. Engineers think this is a cool project. But it's also very difficult because of where it is, and we don't usually have to think about these kinds of things. So being remote, I'll show you why that's important. Project is one of a kind. It's not truly the only one of its kind, but I only know of two others, and I'm going to show you some data on the two others that are on the West Coast. There aren't a lot of examples to copy or to look at and compare what you do to. It's a 15-story steel structure with gates and controls and weighs just the steel about 375 tons when it's all put together. The wet well installation requires diving to 100 feet. There are all kinds of challenges associated with deep water diving. In one of my past lives, I did this. I've dove to 95 feet to do inspection and have spent a lot of time between 30 and 60 feet. It is interesting work, and it can be dangerous if it's not properly done. We also have to keep this facility operating because we are still providing water to town while we're doing this. And we have the water quality requirements to manage both for people and for fish while this project is underway. And I'm going to show you a little bit about each of those. Project cost estimate history. In 2008, the price was $10 million, and I'm carefully separating out here the $4.5 million that has to do with the fish passage pipe, because that wasn't in the original scheme, so I'm keeping them separate so you can see what's going on. The original two-tower option for the temperature control power towers back in 2008 was $10 million. Obviously, you can see it's grown. The reason that it's grown, the principal reason, is both means and methods. That's how you actually put this thing together. And also, it was a planning level estimate and probably didn't consider all of the relevant things like how hard this is to do where it's at, and I'm going to show you about that. The one tower option, which is what you're seeing before you today, point to note here is when this was originally scoped, we were going to put temperature control gates on both towers because we're very conservative and we like to make sure we can do everything all the time. In going through the design for this project, one of the things we did was do a CMGC. CMGCs do all kinds of things, but one of the great things they do is when you're doing projects that you don't do very often, you can often use the help of a contractor who's experienced in doing the work to help you lay out the work and figure out what your means and methods are going to be. And Advanced American was very valuable to us in doing that because we obviously had never built a temperature control tower before. In doing the design, we've been watching costs, and we became concerned very early about the cost growth, making sure that we were doing right-minded things. We did a VE study to try and trim anything out that we weren't absolutely certain need to be there. And then last summer, we sat down and looked at the costs, and they looked like they were still going to be over what we had programmed. And we had some very difficult conversations internally about, do we really need two sets of gates? And we came to the conclusion that we don't.
Can I ask a question off of this?
Yes, sir, you may.
To either you or David. You know, what we've seen in the last few years is when we've put things out for competitive bids, we've seen that we're getting pretty good prices because of the down economy. This is somewhat unusual in that your historical analysis shows that over a three-year period, it's doubled in cost in terms of projections. And we've gone from a two-tower to a one-tower, which is somewhat counterintuitive. You've said that you've been scrubbing the numbers, and you know, we obviously will defer to you on that. But what's the takeaway again as to what has changed over 3 years, and it explains the significant jump in price?
When you did the original planning estimate and. The history of this project goes back to like 2000, 2002. This job is all about means and methods and exactly how it's designed and put together. For example, in the original project estimate, there was only 60 tons of steel. That's a planning estimate. It's kind of the typical thing you would do at planning level. It's fudge factors and cost numbers and somebody drawing sketches on a piece of paper. Over the intervening 10 years, more or less, the price of steel has gone up, even with the recession, just the simple inflation factor. The original project had 60 tons of steel in it. This thing actually takes 375 tons of steel to do. If we'd have done both towers, it would have been 500 plus tons of steel to put in there. And steel's expensive, and it's expensive to manipulate it, manufactured into what you're going to use. The original planning level estimate, I don't believe, gave accurate allowance for how difficult this is to be there, to do this. There are a lot of costs in getting up there to do it, and I'm going to show you some pictures of that.
If I could add, we are still experiencing what you just described. We recently got the bids for the Emergency Coordination Center that we're working on with POEM, and we got lower bids than we were expecting. So I think that's still true today, but this particular job involving deep water diving is one where there aren't that many firms out there that can do the type of work we're talking about, and as Mike will show you in the slides that are coming, that just the access to where we're going is part of the complicating factors that make it so expensive.
Another thing that can't be discounted is that this all has to be done by divers. And when we were doing the design work, one of the big reasons we decided to get a CMGC is that the estimates were kind of all over the map from folks who were imagining how you do it. So we got the CMGC contractor on board, Advanced American, and I think we're extremely fortunate to have them. They're well-known, well-respected, and they know what they're doing. And the way this diving works is it's personnel intensive. It's not just one diver. You have to have someplace between 4 and 6 down there at any one time. The regulations and safety requirements for deep water diving are very difficult. And they're designed to ensure that the diver gets to come back to the top. So for each diver, you have a tender. And for some number of divers, you have a dive master. And their business is to keep an eye on this guy on the bottom and be in constant communication with them.
So I need to interrupt you because we have a time 15 time certain that will take probably just a few minutes. But they've all arrived, and I want to pause if that's okay with you. It's an appointment. It's important, so if you could hold that thought.
I will hold that thought.
And suspend the rules to come back to this item, which is item 371 and 372, and we will now consider the 10:15 time certain. Carla, can you please read the title for item number 1350?
Appoint Philip Hillar to the Regional Arts and Culture Council Board for term to expire June 30, 2013.
Well, I'm very pleased to offer for council consideration Mr. Hillar. We're very lucky to have him interested in this position, and he joins a board for the Regional Arts and Cultural Council that is just a powerhouse of a board. With a fantastic leader on the staff, with Eloise and the entire team. So I'm very pleased to offer this appointment for council's consideration. Would you like to say more?
Sure. Thank you, Mayor Adams. Good morning, everybody in the commission. I am thrilled to introduce Philip to you. He is somebody that we've been courting for a while, and he was too busy for a while, so now we have him. And we're very happy. He has many talents, and most recently, I think, managed a couple of miracles to pull off being the host for a national Native American Association conference here that hadn't been here in 20 years, right, Phil?
Yes, yes, that is correct. It was the National Congress of the American Indians, and I'm very honored to be invited and very delighted to be a part of this community. I have lived here in Portland for 28 years and come from the Lummi tribe, Lummi Nation, which is near Bellingham, Washington. This is my second home. I still call Lummi my home, and culture is very important to me. It's, without culture, you have nothing, and it's very very important role to be on this board, and very, very delighted to be here.
So I hope you will embrace him for the RAC board. I know he's going to bring a tremendous amount of energy. He has already, and I think he's only been to one or two meetings. So we're really, really happy to have him and look forward to his contributions to RAC and to our entire arts community here. Thank you.
Any questions from council? Does anyone wish to...
I'm just curious, what occupation are you?
My background is media, advertising, and I'm an artist.
Okay. Additional, unless there are additional questions, or anyone would wish to testify on item number 1350?
No one signed up.
Can you please call the vote?
Do you want a motion to accept the report?
I move to accept the nomination, the report.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Would you please call the vote?
Leonard?
Thank you, Mr. Hlar, for agreeing to serve. Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for your service and for yours, Eloise. The Regional Arts and Culture Commission is extremely important. It manages a lot of money as well as providing a lot of services to citizens and to artists in creating jobs in arts and culture. So it's a big responsibility, and I appreciate your willingness to serve. Aye.
Fritz? I'm sorry, Fish.
Welcome to RAC, and thank you for agreeing to take on this assignment. Aye.
Saltzman?
Thank you for your service. Aye.
Adams?
Very pleased to vote aye. Thank you. Aye.
Thank you.
All right. That takes us back to our otherwise scheduled programming. We will now be considering again, for those of you following along, items number 1371 and 1372. You were literally in the middle of a sentence, so I'm
clever, but I can't remember exactly.
You were at the word.
Exactly.
We were talking about tenders.
Yes.
And dive masters.
Yes. Tenders and dive masters, and there's.
Well, I'm curious what a tender is. Is that somebody who
tender is the guy at the stop, and I'm going to show you pictures that will make all this. It's really very interesting how this works, and I'll show you how all this trips out. I'm going to go on to the next slide. These are three other projects that we could find that are temperature control facilities, And what you can see if you read through there is there's a fairly wide variance in what these things cost, $110 million, $80 million, $55 million. We're definitely at the low end of those. If you look down in configuration, you can see that there's one, the $80 million one, that are 300 feet high. The $110 million one is 57 feet high. There's a huge variation here in trying to compare yourself to somebody else. And partly that variation is the exact nature of the design, and partly that variation is how can you build it? Because for the most part, you're working out in a reservoir. Even if you can dump the reservoir, you have to deal with how do you travel across the muck in the bottom. So we did our best to try and compare where we had comparisons. In working our way through what this project costs, we've done VE studies and had an outside facilitator come in and do that. We have our own estimate. We have the estimate from the engineering firm, Black & Veatch, and, of course, the estimate from the contractor, and we worked very hard to rationalize those estimates. And I still think we're getting a very good deal here for the type of work. And then I want to go on and show you what this work is like, and this will all come clear.
Just before you do that, I'm really intrigued by the price, the guaranteed maximum price of $31,552,701. How did you come up with something that specific rather than 33 or 34 or 31 or 30?
Oh, ma'am. We make big estimating spreadsheets, and we add them up, and because we deal in dollars and cents, that's what it added up to. In casual conversation, we would say $33 million or something like that. But the spreadsheets, we have to add them up, and that's what they add up.
That's what it comes out to. So I appreciate that. And I also wanted to note, and following up from Commissioner Fish's comment, that when we bid it back in January of 10, it was at $30 million. So even though it changed from the very rough estimate in 2008, it's not much different. And I do appreciate you showing me those three other projects, which were significantly more expensive.
So project phasing, we talk about this thing in two parts. As we have developed this, we were going to be doing the UV plant, and now it appears that we are going to get a variance. Part one is the North Tower and South Tower work. That's the stuff that is required to do the temperature control and gate improvements. That's $27 million. And part two is the fish flow piping at Headworks. That's $4.5 million.
And I wanted to add just one thing to that.
Right now, even with the two towers reconfigured, the north tower so that we can do selective withdrawal, the reason why we have to do the fish flow piping is because everything is plumbed so that it all mixes together. So everything that comes through the north tower or the south tower mixes together and goes into town and down the river to the fish. The fish flow piping allows us to segregate it so that we can separate it so that just the water from the selective withdrawal, either at the bottom of the reservoir, is going down the river, or just the water that is at the upper levels is going down the river and not being mixed with the colder water. So that's why it's separate.
And since it's separate and in a different location, why did you decide to add it to this contract rather than doing a separate contract for the piping?
Convenience. We were going to put it in the UV project. If the UV project would have gone ahead, that would be where it belonged, because it's a confined area up there. And all of that piping, that place looks really clean and tidy above ground. But when you start peeling the ground back, there's probably miles of pipe down there, and it needed to be under the control of one contractor who was managing.